online, on digital, and on FM.
This is Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan, and this is CAMS Politics for February 2024. In the next hour, we'll talk to Cambridge MP Daniel Zeichner about his great expectations for the forthcoming general election. We'll meet Alex Boulat, who's bidding to be Labour's candidate for Huntingdon just 12 years after she arrived in Britain as an immigrant from Romania. We'll get the Lib Dem view on what's being called the Civic Quarter of Cambridge. That's the Guildhall, the Market Square and the Corn Exchange to you and me. And we'll find out why the Conservatives in South Cams are so opposed to the council's four-day week for office workers. All that to come, plus our old friend Phil Rogers to guide us through the weeds. And Phil, can we start with some stats? I know you love a statistic. What can we learn from the recent YouGov MRP poll? This is the one that's predicted a massive Labour landslide nationally. What about the seats in and around Cambridge?
Yes, well, basically the way an MRP poll works is they poll quite a lot of people and then they sort of look at demographic factors in each area to try and sort of project that onto what's happening in each seat. And for Cambridge, pretty unsurprisingly, it's showing a large Labour lead. And I think that's more or less what everyone's expecting at the moment. South Cambridgeshire, we're seeing quite a substantial Lib Dem majority there. I'm not totally convinced about that myself. I think it might be a little bit closer. But even in Ely and East Cambridgeshire, the poll is predicting that the Lib Dems will just snatch that from Lucy Fraser by a small majority. And frankly, I think that really would be a bit of a surprise. Then we've got the new seat of St Neots and Mid-Cambridgeshire, and that's looking a bit like a three-way fight at the moment.
And that's the one that Anthony Brown has gone off to fight instead of South Cams, where he's representing at the moment.
Yes, he still has about a third of his old seat in the new St Neots Mid-Cams seat, but clearly on these statistics, it's looking a lot better for the Conservatives than the new South Cambridgeshire is, so you can understand why he's made that move.
And what are these notional 2019 results extrapolated into 2024? I'm not entirely sure I understand what this process is, but it's interesting, giving some interesting results.
So this time around, we've had quite substantial boundary changes in a lot of places because some new rules have come in saying the populations of each seat need to be closer together. And in order to understand what the political picture's looking like, these marvellously named professors Rallings and Thrasher put together all these statistics, basically taking the vote from 2019 and putting it onto the new boundaries. So it's if people had been voting on the new boundaries back at the last general election, what they think would have happened then.
And what do we learn from the published figures locally?
Well, again, I mean, Cambridge hasn't changed a great deal, so it's still the majority on the new boundaries. The South Cambridgeshire seat, which has changed quite a bit, that's looking even tighter than it did last time. And last time it was pretty tight with Anthony Brown just winning ahead of the Lib Dem candidate. But Ely and East Cambridgeshire and also the new seat of St Neots and Mid-Cambridgeshire on the 2019 vote both had fairly chunky Tory majorities.
One more thing before we roll our guests in. The Mayor's Precept. Now, a precept is a tax, isn't it? And it's going up. So what are we going to get for this extra money that we're paying?
Yes, the precept is basically a slice of the overall council tax bill. So there's several different authorities that we pay council tax to. And the combined authority run by the mayor has put his precept up from £12 to £36 for a Band D property. And that is three times. So percentage-wise, that's quite a big increase. But you've got to remember that a Band D property is paying around £2,000 in a year in council tax. So that £36 slice is still a pretty small part of it. And that money is going to subsidise a number of new bus services around the county, including several here in Cambridge. There's going to be a new orbital one sort of going round the city centre, new express service to Huntingdon, more frequent buses on some of the busway routes and a few others besides.
Phil Rogers, thank you very much. Stay where you are, please. We'll be back with you in a minute. In the meantime, let's have some music from Coldplay.
I used to rule the world, but that was when I ruled the world.
Coldplay and Viva La Vida on CAMS Politics from Cambridge 105 Radio. Well, now let's meet County Councillor Dr. Alex Boulat. So far, so formal. But how's this for a backstory? Alex was born in Romania and she came to Britain aged 18 with just a smattering of English only 12 years ago. In 2021, she was elected to represent the Abbey Ward in Cambridge, and she's now bidding to be selected to fight Huntingdon for Labour in the forthcoming general election. And I'm delighted to say she's with us now. Alex Boulat, the first question I wanted to ask you was, having lived in Britain since 2012 and become a naturalised British citizen, do you now feel British or do you still feel an outsider at all?
That's a really good question to start with. And I often find myself reflecting on this because I think when I moved to the UK, I was 18 years old. But unlike other people who moved to study or to work short term, I really moved with the intention to stay permanently. I kind of took this decision for myself at 18, leaving home and leaving my home country, that I would settle in the UK. And I think if you're thinking in that way, you kind of feel British after like a long time in the UK. And it was one of the reasons why I applied to become British after being settled in the UK, because I thought that actually kind of corresponds with my identity, with the place that I want to live long term or forever.
I think there are lots of people based in Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire who would say, well, amen to that. And we want to be supportive of people who've come to live in our country. But you must be aware that there are other parts of Cambridgeshire where there's quite a lot of anti-immigrant feeling. Is that going to go away in your view, or against the backdrop of stop the boats and all that stuff, is it actually getting worse?
Well, I think if you look at public opinion on immigration, over time it has become more positive, and that often is counterintuitive because if we just read some particular media sources or if we listen to specific politicians speaking in parliament, we are led to believe that actually the feeling is more negative. But there's something I observed as well, just knocking on doors, like going out campaigning. I think the majority of people, if you actually engage in a conversation on immigration, of course, people have mixed views and they're always like pros and cons of any particular immigration policy. But I think in general, people understand, you know, the topic and they want to have a conversation about this. I actually don't think it's helpful to avoid speaking about immigration, because if you avoid, then you just leave the sound bites to fill in the gaps, and sound bites tend to be negative.
Do you think that the Keir Starmer Labour Party is voicing those issues strenuously enough?
Well, in an election year, I think it is important to also be pragmatic about anything that we say, you know, as a Labour Party or any party, because ultimately, if we were to have a new government, you actually have to be able to deliver like some of those policies and implement them. And I worked in the immigration space as an immigration advisor, working for different charities on the campaign side, on kind of the lobbying side, as well as now within a political party. And I think people have different ideas on like what the best immigration system should be. But for me, it's ultimately about the fact that, you know, like we will always have people moving, you know, let's put it like this. As long as you have like wars, persecution, violence in the world, as long as you have like unequal economies in the world, you'll have people moving from one place to another between countries and also within the UK. And the question is, how do you manage that as a country? And I think you have to be realistic about this, but also without actually moving towards this fear of just being negative, just to stoke up division and just to pit people against each other. So I think there is a middle ground of actually being like, this is the reality. We have to have a policy for this. Let's see what actually works, rather than just having like gimmicks like the Rwanda plan that doesn't work, or like, you know, just speaking nonsense really in some, you know, in some political circles about things that just pragmatically wouldn't work. I, as someone who worked on immigration, I would like to see some of, you know, some more detail being spoken about. But that's why you have people who are passionate about this in political circles, like myself. There are other candidates, other councillors who have a immigration policy background who do speak about those issues often. And I think we're all kind of part of the Labour debate around this.
The elephant in the room, of course, particularly I think with the Labour Party, is Brexit. You were not in favour of Brexit. And my guess would be that you would quite like the Labour Party to embrace at least getting back to some kind of relationship with the EU. Would I be right about that?
Well, I think Labour and Keir Starmer and his shadow cabinet have been quite clear they want to have a closer relationship with the EU, like in recent interviews and media appearances. I think that's another question, like the debate on immigration, which tends to be so divisive. Brexit, of course, is a very divisive debate. I personally couldn't vote in the referendum because at that point I wasn't a British citizen, so I could have an opinion on it, and I had friends who were both for and against, but it was a very interesting situation to be in because I couldn't have a formal say in a decision that ultimately impacted my ability to, you know, I had to apply for a new status and so on, so it impacted me directly more than it impacted other people, yet I couldn't have a say. But that aside, I think now we are, well, about 8 years on since Brexit. So I think the conversation has moved on a bit. So now it is again about what is actually realistic in those circumstances. I know some people are campaigning to rejoin. My personal view, I don't think that is possible, like in the foreseeable future. Like, I think it will take another generation to debate the issue again. And I think there's so much going on in the country at the moment, like the state of our NHS, the state of our council services that I'm sure you want to ask about.
So you're currently a county councillor and you represent Abbey in the city of Cambridge. And on your website, you say that one in five children in that ward lives currently in poverty. That's an extraordinary stat. And I wonder what you think the county council is doing about lifting people out of poverty.
Yeah, so I stood, the first time I ever stood for election was in 2021, and it is for the Abbey seat on Cambridgeshire County Council. And just being part of the campaign, it's one of the many shocking statistics I learned as I was preparing my campaign. And it was really, really shocking to me because I hadn't appreciated fully before how much of a difference there is between different Cambridge areas and how the life expectancy can even be even 10 years lower if you move, you know, if you just like cycle 15 or 20 minutes across the city. So I'm really passionate about, you know, early years education, about, you know, providing a good future for our children. And that's why one of my main campaign issues was around, like, you know, getting back a nursery in a community center in Abbey. So one of the things I think the council has done well, and I'm the first to say that there's a lot of work to be done, and, you know, I'm the first to recognize this, but one of the things I think the county council did well in collaboration with the city council in Cambridge is the plans to redevelop East Barnwell. And this includes a new community center. And that's where the county council contribution is, because the county will put in like a new, well, the library will move in a new community center and will have like a nursery, which is in the same building. And I think for me, having that kind of community space that is not a rundown building that looks like in the 70s or the 60s at the moment, having like a new building that is in the heart of the community that has all the services in one is really important, because being able to, for example, pick up your child from nursery and maybe go to the library, like, you know, just like a few seconds away, and maybe go and get some advice from Citizens Advice and have everything in the same place is really important for that anti-poverty work, because it is very difficult for people to have, you know, if you're in that situation, to have the time and the space and the planning necessary to go and access all those services if they're all over the place. So that's an important project for me. But we have other things as well, like the government, until, well, we don't know if that will continue. I don't think it will after April. But so far we had the household support fund, so providing people with £110 vouchers for essential goods and food and so on. And one of the other things I'm really proud of is that despite all the reduction of funding from central government across the UK and inflation and so on, we were able to continue free school meal vouchers for all school holidays for children who are eligible for that. So that's another thing that would really help Abbey and the city in general and the county.
So you haven't yet been adopted as the prospective Labour candidate for Huntingdon, but I'm sure you're confident that you will be. Is it now a marginal? Do you think you can win?
I think it is very difficult to say. I think 2024 will actually have a lot of surprises. It will be like in 1997, I think, looking at the public opinion polling at the moment. So I would say my attitude is like never say never. However, I'm also a very pragmatic and realistic person. And I do think there is a lot of work. And I don't necessarily see it as, you know, a place where you can just campaign for 3 months, especially if the election is in May, and then completely overturn what has been the safest Conservative seat under John Major. Like, I think that is a very, very difficult challenge. However, if, you know, if I'm selected as a candidate, I will, of course, do my absolute best to campaign, to go out every day, to speak to as many voters as possible. You know, speaking to between 70,000 and 80,000 people is impossible in a campaign, even if you have a lot of volunteers with you, but I'll do my very best. And hopefully,
when you go out on the streets of Huntingdon, where of course you now live, what are people saying to you? Are they saying, yes, we understand what the Labour Party is about? Or are they saying, yes, we want to get rid of the other lot? Is there a sense that there is some real momentum behind Keir Starmer and not just anti-Tory?
I think there's a mix of views, really. I think the market towns in Huntington and St. Ives, it's really interesting because the local politics has shifted recently. So we have three district councillors, Labour district councillors in Huntington North, and we have one Labour councillor in St. Ives South as well. And that really kind of, alongside other political changes, contributed to the Conservatives losing control of Huntingtonshire District Council just in 2022. So I think like locally, some things are changing and people like do get the Labour message and do want to see a change and like do, you know, follow some of the work our district councillors are doing. I think it's more about more and more people feeling that just something needs to change, that they want like a different way to do things. And they ultimately, I think in Huntington, what's really important is I think people across political divides, people who voted Conservative, Liberal Democrat, Green, Labour, or being non-voters in the past, say we just want an MP who is actually present, who actually goes around all the villages, like speaks to residents, who actually has constituency surgeries in the market towns, who actually responds to emails, and can have different opinions about the current MP. Like, you know, I don't know like a lot about him, but I think that's the sense I'm getting from people. They want someone who is a bit more present and responsive and engaged in local community projects and events and so on.
We're going to talk to Daniel Zeichner in a few minutes on this programme. I wondered if you've ever had a discussion with him about life as an MP.
Yes, I know Daniel quite well, and I have asked every MP that I got the opportunity to meet some of their thoughts about being an MP. I also read like many books about, like, you know, from former MPs and like how to be an MP as well, because I'm a researcher by training, so I need to research before I actually like put myself into a situation. I think it is not for everyone really to be involved in local politics. It does get exhausting at times, but it's also positive when you finally get a pothole filled in after 2 years of reporting it. That is a plus. So yeah, I did speak to Daniel about it, and yeah, I'm looking forward to a new challenge. If I'm selected as the Labour candidate, I'm looking forward to a new challenge.
Well, we'll find out about that very soon. Councillor Alex Boulat, thanks very much for joining us on CAMS Politics. A great pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm not allowed to express a political opinion, but I was very charmed by Alex Boulat, and she has a very remarkable story to tell.
Yes, I think she's one of these people who is a natural campaigner and is very good at communicating and, you know, dealing with, frankly, some of the abuse that people get in politics these days.
What's your reading of the extent to which immigration is an issue locally?
Well, it's been down and it's coming back up again, is my impression. So certainly during the pandemic, immigration really sort of faded away as what people were mainly concerned about. And not unsurprisingly, the state of health and the economy were the main things. But in the last year or two, it has been creeping back up in the figures. So there's regular polling on this, and it's currently about the third highest issue in the most important issues polls. So certainly people are concerned about it.
Thanks very much indeed, Phil. We'll talk to Tim Bick from the Lib Dems about the civic quarter of Cambridge after this from the Pet Shop Boys. The Pet Shop Boys, back with a new album soon. Well, next on CAMS Politics, major changes ahead for Cambridge City Centre, or as it's now being called, the Civic Quarter. City councillors have agreed to invite design teams to produce plans for the refurbishment of the Market Square, the Guildhall and the Corn Exchange. Let's find out what Tim Bick, leader of the Lib Dem group on the City Council, thinks about it all. So, Tim, you've described this so-called Civic Quarter as a bit overblown. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that most people who know the city don't really understand that they've got a civic quarter. And I think when it comes down to brass tacks, what the council is talking about here is improving three spaces. Two of the three are improving the insides of buildings, and the third is about the Market Square, which is an open space. The extent to which they all link together and make something completely different, I really doubt. But that doesn't mean that investing in them isn't welcome and sensible.
Is there an issue at all about the way that this kind of work is commissioned in the modern age, where you have to put things out to consultation and then you have to get bids in, and the whole process of moving from the idea to the construction seems to go on forever and ever. And usually when, you know, doesn't have to be HS2, usually the costs go up, don't they? Do you think the council will be able to keep a lid on that?
Well, you're making a very good point, Trevor. It does feel to many people like the council's much better at talking about projects than actually accomplishing them. But I mean, I think that where public money is involved, we need to go through due process. We need to make sure that all angles are covered and that money is not being wasted on the one hand. And on the other hand, I think that there are aspects of what's proposed on this sort of occasion which are very sensitive. And I think especially I'm talking here about the Market Square, where there are many people who love and treasure the Market Square. And I think that whilst there is a consensus that we could all do better with that space, what actually we mean by better has some subtle differences. And I do think that these need to be fleshed out. It's really important that we take people with us, especially the market traders, without whom we really don't have a market square anyway.
And so, the council has announced, hasn't it, plans to establish some kind of working group, steering group, consultation group, which will include the market traders so that they can sample those opinions. In the end, do you believe them? They're genuine about wanting to know what the public and the people who run the stalls want?
I think they are. I attended the first one of these meetings, which has already taken place this week. And indeed, everyone professed their keenness to do this meaningfully. So that's all good. But the council has been in these sort of processes before, and many of the market traders and others there said this feels a bit like deja vu, and previous occasions have not ended with a consensus on how to proceed. So one of my main points about the marketplace particularly is that we haven't yet proven the concept, particularly with the nature of the stalls that will fill it out, and that this process is so far so good. But we need to take the market traders with us. There needs to be a lot of talking.
Let's just have a quick word about the Corn Exchange. Some of us are old enough to remember when it was closed down temporarily for a few months some decades ago, and it stayed closed, didn't it, for years. What's the plan here to make it so much more desirable that isn't going to cost an enormous amount of money?
Well, they're talking about improving the acoustics.
And not a moment too soon, we would have to say, but acoustic refurbishment is expensive, isn't it?
Yes. So acoustics is one thing. I think the energy efficiency of the place is another. And also they want to improve the sort of the social hospitality space that goes with the performing space. The point that I wanted to put on the table about that this week is that it's a good thing to proceed with, but that we're dealing with the Corn Exchange a bit. It's a bit different from the other two parts of this project in the sense that it is a facility for paying ticket buyers, and that we should be approaching it more in terms of an investment which pays back. Because if we are successful in improving all those things about it, then we ought to be able to increase the income from the number of events and the number of people that go to the events and the amount of money that they do spend in the bar. I think that there are many people, maybe regrettably, who have never been to the Corn Exchange, don't intend to go to the Corn Exchange. And I think that as council taxpayers, we have to respect that in principle, what's needed to improve it needs to be paid for out of the money that's coming through the business of the Corn Exchange.
Yes, it feels almost, doesn't it, like a slightly old-fashioned idea that the city council provides the venue where the entertainment occurs. I think that you're painting a vision of a slightly more modern, customer-driven, revenue-driven funding model.
I am, really. Yes, and yes, you could say that, you know, the days of the council laying on bread and circuses for the populace, maybe that is a bit passé these days. But I mean, in principle, if it's thriving, then it will have lots of people wanting to go to it. And that income that they generate would pay for the improvements. And I just think that is by far the fairest way, as far as the city in total is concerned, to pay for such an improvement.
Tim Bick from the Liberal Democrats on the City Council, thank you so much for joining us on CAMS Politics. No doubt we'll have you on again very soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Trevor.
So, Phil Rogers, the Civic Quarter, or the City Centre, as some of us might call it, do you think anything big's going to happen there?
Well, this is a big chunk of money. It's £20 million being allocated, and that's mostly for the Guildhall. And I think some of the changes in the market are going to be quite controversial. Whether you can really tie these three things together and call them a civic quarter, I'm not so convinced. But nevertheless, it's clear that there's sort of a serious project underway here. And I think probably the most controversial aspect of it is going to be what's happening in the market.
CAMS Politics with Trevor Dann on Cambridge 105 Radio.
It's time to find out what's going on at South Cambs District Council. Now, in the last episode of this show, Council Leader Bridget Smith was telling us that all's well with their finances and that the controversial four-day week for office workers was helping with staff recruitment as well as saving money. But new figures have now emerged on their own website, which suggests that temporary staff costs, that's mainly agency workers, have actually gone up. And Conservative councillors have accused the Lib Dems of spending £3.3 million of taxpayers' money to give staff an extra day off each week. I spoke to the Tory leader in South Cams, Heather Williams.
There are a few things about the actual four-day week principles itself, but equally how it's been managed. I very much believe that if taxpayers are paying for 5 days a week, that's what they should be getting. And I feel very much that if we're going to give value to residents, we should be looking to maximise the output in the time that we're paying people. I don't blame people, by the way, if they want to work 4 days a week. You know, plenty of people up and down the country made that decision, but they accept that they're only going to get paid for those 4 days. And actually, the issue is not whether people want to work four or five. The issue is them being paid for a day that they're not doing.
But the governing party on South Cambs District Council, the Lib Dems, they would say that actually this saves money because it helps them recruit and retain staff. Do you not buy that argument?
I'd be honest, the information that's coming through from us, I don't find reliable. It will take years to know anything on retention. So then we look at recruitment. What we do know is that we haven't got parity between desk-based staff and waste crews. So although it's dubbed as a four-day week, we're seeing more and more difference. We've got, you know, senior management on 5-6-figure salaries doing 30 hours and waste crews doing 32 or 34. So we're already seeing that resentment start to, I think, will it get worse. But we can see through the Bennett Institute report on the redacted version, which the council asked to have removed, was its resentment growing in staff. And I don't think that that resentment will help with retention. But on recruitment, what we can see is that agency spend is going up. There are a few roles that have been filled, but there is multiple reasons for why people are looking at the moment to local authorities as a more secure way to work. Also, the pensions. I nearly fell off my chair when I found out how much the pensions are. As somebody that works in the private, it's like 13%. So I think the issue as well is there is a particular issue in planning, will be as a national issue, but how the four-day week helps with that, you know, all we're going to be doing potentially is taking from other councils, other public services. So when they then have to follow suit, if this was to become permanent, we're then in exactly the same position as we were before.
Okay, so in your press release a few days ago, you said that the administration is spending £3.3 million worth of taxpayers' money to give staff an extra day off a week. And then you say, you quote the Lib Dems as saying that this number is without a clear source and that it has no basis in reality. Well, of course, that's them criticising your figures. Where did you get these figures from?
Actually, those figures came from the Lib Dem leader herself. And yet in the press, they say they're unreliable. And this has been part of my concerns of how it's been dealt with and how it's been handled. Yeah, there's been a lot of things, whether it's the council officers requesting removal of certain bits out of independent reports, whether it's access to information. I've had to really battle just to be able to see the data that's been submitted to government. Because don't forget, we've been put on a best value notice, which is very serious for a council. And you know, I was told no, then I wasn't going to get it. I had to get legal advice and put in extra rights and my right to access. It's been a battle for information internally. And then, you know, the information if the Lib Dems themselves are concerned about how reliable the information their leader is giving, I don't know. I'm lost for words on that one. How are we meant to feel safe and that the information we're giving is reliable? And whether you agree with the four-day working week or not, I represent, you know, residents, and I've not been allowed a vote on this. And I think there's a real big issue for me with the way all of this has been handled, in the fact that we're not debating it, we're not being allowed. In fact, we tried to have a debate around the issue, which couldn't be thrown out of the council. And indeed, the leader put a motion to close it early. It's been a very sad time, I have to say, at the council.
Okay, let me move you on, if I may, to the almost certain general election this year. You're the election agent for South Cams. You lost your sitting MP, Anthony Brown, who's gone off to fight another constituency. The latest projections from those opinion polls are not very good news for you, are they? They're suggesting that actually this Lib Dem party might end up dethroning the Conservatives in South Cams, unheard of some years ago when it was such a safe seat. How are you feeling now from your sampling? I know I'm not going to say you've been knocking on doors, because I know you've recently had a fall. But, you know, what? And we
that's
obviously
quite dramatic, doesn't it? I've had a fall.
It's only old people who have a fall, isn't it? I apologise for that. but, you know, what's your sense of what the constituents are telling you? Are they saying, oh, I'm not so sure about these Lib Dems anymore, because they, you know, we don't really trust them with the 4-day week? Are you thinking that you might still have a chance of holding on to the constituency?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a great candidate in Chris Carter Chapman. You know, he's local. He knows the place very well. And I think he's getting that level of trust with people, in that he's coming out and saying on issues like East West Rail and what have you, he's saying his position. And he's been very clear. And sometimes it's very difficult. And what we're finding from people on the doorsteps or on the phones, as I am at the moment, is that people are really concerned about not finding actually what's coming out from the Lib Dems as reliable. And that very much is how I feel as a councillor, you know, getting that information. So I can completely hear it, whether it's congestion charge, you know, they were promoting it, and yet we had the individual come out against it. Yeah, it's all very blurred. And then we had this sort of bizarre internal Lib Dem battle in GCP board meeting, where they were sort of attacking their own parliamentary candidates for opposing it. So it's, I can understand why people will be confused where their position is on a lot of issues. I also, if I'm honest, feel a bit sorry for Labour, because the Lib Dems are very busy saying they can't win. But actually, Labour getting quite frustrated on social media that they're being dismissed in this way. Lib Dems are telling people, you know, that they've got no chance, when actually they're using information from a completely different constituency now. You know, the boundary changes mean South Cams is a very, very different place, you know, in its geography. We've, for example, you've got Cherry Hinton part of it before, Bulsham, Linton. So it's really not right to be comparing the previous South Cams constituency, because it's just very, very different place.
Heather Williams, Leader of the Opposition on South Cams District Council, thank you so much for joining us on Cams Politics. Always a pleasure to have you on, and I hope the ankle gets better soon.
So do I. I'm not a good patient, and my husband is not a good nurse.
So, Phil Rogers, there's Heather Williams from the Conservatives in South Cambridgeshire. Remarkably confident, I think.
Yes, a particularly interesting point, I think, is that she was sort of talking up Labour a bit, and that's absolutely going to be a key issue in this seat. If it's seen as being a two-horse race between the Lib Dems and the Conservatives, then there's certainly scope for tactical voting for people who are keen to get the Tories out, switching from Labour. But if it's seen as a three-horse race, then Labour voters are more likely to stick with their candidates and not switch to the Lib Dems, and that could favour the Conservatives. So I think we'll see quite a bit of this as time goes on.
I thought that Heather was bigging up her opposition to the 4-day week rather in the way that the Tories did in their opposition to the congestion charge last year. I think they think this is a hot button topic, don't they?
Well, certainly the congestion charge did get traction with the voters, and we definitely saw that in results. Whether the four-day week will or not, we'll find out at the ballot box. But some people, perhaps working 5 days in the private sector, might resent the fact that these council employees are only doing 4 days. But on the other hand, other people, you know, they just want their bins emptied. And so long as that carries on, they'll be okay with it.
Daniel Zeichner, MP for Cambridge, is up next on CAMS Politics. Before him, Van Morrison.
I've been searching a long time.
Van is undoubtedly the man. Van Morrison, of course, on CAMS Politics. It's time to catch up now with Cambridge's MP, Daniel Zeichner. Lots to talk about, but apologies in advance for the slightly dodgy Wi-Fi connection. Daniel, first of all, what's the difference in the Labour Party at Westminster now between 2024 and 2019? Are you all feeling very confident? Is there a spring in your step?
Well, of course there is. 2019 was a terrible defeat for the Labour Party, and Keir Starmer, I think, has completely changed the Labour Party. So certainly members of Parliament, I think, are very disciplined, very behind Keir in what he's doing. But we are also mindful of the scale of the challenge that faces us, both in terms of an election when it comes, and then if we are successful in terms of the challenges we face, because they are very different from 1997.
I don't know whether you ever met Mairead Healy, who was a city councillor for Labour, but she was on this programme a couple of months ago, and she had a go at you, Daniel, and she said that you'd really let the side down by not voting for a ceasefire in Gaza. Now, you may argue, well, that's not a local issue, but how would you react to that argument, which I guess you must have heard put to you?
Well, I represent the whole city. So there are obviously people in the city who both know and were deeply, deeply hurt and upset by the terrible Hamas attack. Absolutely, it is awful what's happening in Gaza. But we've got to have a sustainable ceasefire, and that's what David Lammy and Keir Starmer have been arguing for, to produce a long-term solution to this problem. Just calling for a ceasefire doesn't solve the problem. So we're looking for a two-state solution. I think that's what Joe Biden's looking for. And that's what Labour will try and help the international community to secure. Far too many people have lost their lives in Gaza. Certainly Netanyahu, I think, is a problem in terms of this. But the two-state solution is what we're looking for.
Have you personally experienced any anti-Semitism within Cambridge as a result of your, they would say, lukewarm support on this issue? And I mean, we know that some Jewish MPs have been struggling with some of this within their own constituencies. I just wonder if you've had any of that.
Yes, I have had some unpleasantness. But as I say, I represent the whole of the city. And whilst I understand how strong the strength of feeling is on both sides of the argument, I think the really important thing to do is to try and find a long-term solution.
I talked a few moments ago to Alex Boulat, who's going to be standing, or is hoping to stand, for Labour in Huntingdon. And I asked her if she'd spoken to you about being an MP, and she said that she had, and she'd found the whole experience very encouraging. I wonder if in the week that we've had yet another MP saying, I can't stand this anymore, I'm off, whether in any way it challenges your sense of whether being an MP is the right thing to be doing. You know, it does seem to be a slightly more scary way of life than perhaps it did.
Well, I'm not going to be bullied by a very, very few people, and nor should anybody else. I remember a few years ago going to the YHA to meet a group of people from Turkey. And in fact, it was the weekend of the attempted coup against Erdogan. And I turned up on my electric bike and they said, where are your bodyguards? And I said, well, this is Cambridge. That's not the way we do politics in this country. They were absolutely staggered.
I was talking a few moments ago to a Lib Dem city councillor about the civic quarter. And I don't know how much you know about these plans and the way that they'll affect what is being called the civic quarter, but it's the Market Square and Guildhall and the Corn Exchange, basically. Do you keep across those kind of small-scale city council issues?
Well, I don't think they're small-scale. I think it's a really big issue, actually. And in answer to your question, every Friday I spend my time going around the city, meeting key people in the city, as well as visiting schools and community groups and so on. So, yes,
I mean, I've been talking to people for years now about trying to find ways of making something of that very special space in the centre of our city. Now, it is a matter in the end for councillors, not for MPs, but I take a close interest and I want to see some of these ideas go forward. Now, they're clearly at a relatively early stage at the moment, but I think we've got a fantastic opportunity in the centre of our city and I think we could do more with it.
As an MP, like most of your colleagues, you like a photo opportunity. You know, that MPs do like a crash hat, don't they, and a yellow jacket. Is the point of that to say to everybody, hey, I'm here and I am interested? Or is it really a part of canvassing?
It's no secret that you don't win elections without people voting for you. Although there's lots and lots that we're doing day in, day out in Parliament, I fully appreciate that most people don't spend their time reading Hansard or watching the debates on TV. So it's very important that we get the opportunity to explain to people not only what we're doing, but what we would like to do in future. So yes, of course, for photo opportunities, often a picture can tell a story in a way that just the written word can't. So I'm always happy to engage with the media and demonstrate to people in the city that I and my colleagues are working hard on their behalf.
We touched on your role looking after the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs brief. How do you feel about Labour Party's so-called U-turn on the £28 billion green investment plan?
Well, it's a whole lot more than the Conservatives, isn't it? This is the key point. We are absolutely committed to greening the economy. That will be a key central part of our economic programme. But Rachel Reeves is entirely right to be cautious about doing anything that repeats the awfulness of the Liz Truss period. Whether we like it or not, markets look at what governments do. And if you don't maintain the confidence of markets, you have the situation where, I mean, incredibly, a Tory MP this week said he couldn't live on £120,000 a year because the mortgage had gone up. So Rachel's right to be cautious. When this was announced a few years ago, the economy was looking rather different. I'm afraid it's pretty perilous at the moment. But do not be under any illusion. It's not a U-turn in the sense that we've changed our ambition. We've just got to make sure it fits in terms of what can be afforded at the time.
The South Cam's Tories were telling me a little earlier in this show that Labour has a good chance in South Cam's. They're saying that they're being written off and that this is the Liberal Democrats trying to do that to suggest that they're the only party that can win. I wonder, as you look around at the other constituencies around yourself, whether you think that there are constituencies that Labour can actually claim to be able to win, not just do well in.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question. And we saw in Mid-Bedfordshire, when there was actually a head-to-head between Labour and the Liberal Democrats, that this endless thing that the Liberal Democrats, the only thing they've got left to say, because there's no point in the Liberal Democrats anymore, the only thing they've got to say is they can win when Labour can't. Well, that's not true. So anyone who doesn't like the Conservatives in South Cambridgeshire should vote Labour, in my view. And I think that the Conservatives are absolutely right. I think the Liberal Democrats, they've lost their soul. What are they for? They used to be strong on the environment. They used to be strong on civil liberties. They used to be strong on Europe. They did have some unique selling points. I don't see any of those anymore. I don't see them talking about those issues in Parliament. This is a straight bite. If people want to change a government in this country, it's a Labour government. And if you want a Labour government, the best thing to do is to vote for it.
So when do you think we'll be able to do that? You know, amongst your colleagues in Westminster, what are you all betting on? Is it May? Is it November? Go on, tell us.
Well, it really should be May, you know, because in my lifetime, apart from times of very acute crisis, general elections have been in May. So the only excuse for not having it in May is Rishi Sunak's desperate to hang on, hoping something turns up. So I hope for the good of the country, it comes sooner. But it wouldn't surprise me if he clings on, as I say, hoping for something to turn up. But what we actually need is a clear decision so the country can move on, because the current indecision and the sort of struggling from week to week makes it very difficult for people to plan. We need a change, obviously, I would say that. But actually, we need a decision. And the best thing that Rishi Sunak could do for the country, I would say, is call an election in May.
Daniel Zeichner, thank you so much for joining us on CAMS Politics. Always a pleasure to hear from you. And doubtless, whether it's May or whenever it is, we'll have you on doing some hustings.
Looking forward to it. Always lovely to talk to you. Thanks ever so much.
So Phil Rogers, as I said to Daniel, he sounds like he's got a spring in his step. Not much chance of him losing anytime soon, is there?
No, I think he's pretty safe this time.
I think we heard a line we'll hear this year from Labour, which is, I don't know what the Lib Dems are for. They used to stand for something, but now they don't, which is a curious way of attacking your opponent.
Yes, and I think in many ways, the next general election is going to be sort of the un-Brexit election. And by that, I don't mean that it's about undoing Brexit. It's about the change there's been since last time. So the Lib Dems in 2019 had a very clear message. It was, can I say bollocks on the radio?
Yeah.
I mean, bollocks to Brexit was the strapline. So
that does tell you something about, some might call it a lack of focus. You know, it's very hard to attribute a particular policy line to the Lib Dems now, apart from vote for us because we're likely to be able to knock the Tories out in a number of seats we've identified.
Yes, and I think that will be quite an appealing message for some sort of voters, but it's certainly not the laser-like focus that they had back in 2019.
So when we meet again, which will be the first Sunday of March, Phil, what will we be talking about then?
Well, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. We're never short of things to talk about in Cambridge and the greater area. Some new GCP meetings coming up, and we'll have to wait and see what they're going to propose. We've got the budgets being set and the amount of council tax being decided, both by the city and by the county, and they've got council meetings coming up next week. And then we've got the Mill Road Bridge, which
that hasn't gone away, has it?
That issue is rolling on. There was a court hearing last week. We're waiting to hear the result of that. And a number of parliamentary by-elections coming up, and we could see some Labour gains in those too.
Well, we shall look forward to that, as we always do. Phil Rogers, thank you so much. This has been CAMS Politics for February, a TDC production for Cambridge 105 Radio. I've been Trevor Dan. See you next month.